everybody, and welcome to another episode of I Am a Fan of. I am Alyssa, also known as Best HP Fan. You can actually check out my website with all my stuff from our podcast to Tumblr, YouTube, livestream, Twitter, anything I report. I put it somewhere in word, form, pictures, up-to-date stuff. Everything just on my website, which is besthpfan, besthpfan .webs, which is webs.com. And on there it has everything that I cover. If it can't make it on its podcast, it makes it somewhere over there. So just check that out. And when I get started with episode 3 of the podcast, this edition is continuation of the Comic-Con stuff. Green Lantern, Sucker Punch. I'm also going to add in some of the creators from Darkwing Duck and Darkwing Duck Comic, the comic from The Incredibles, and also WALL-E. This was a little bit shorter than last time, which last time was the Harry Potter one, which I want to say thank you so much, everybody, for listening. A lot of you are probably happy by that one. which, of course, you know, releasing the audio for Comic-Con for the Harry Potter panel. And thank you for all the new people who have joined in, because there's a lot more coming, too. But I'm going to wait for that, you know, a couple of the announcements at the end, which I'll give you a sneak peek right now. I actually have a couple of interviews coming up from the Harry Potter, he's like the Harry Potter pop-up book that's coming out in October. He's the one who's doing this art pop-up book, and he's the author for it for the Harry Potter book coming in October. It's early October, and I'll get an interview soon from that person. And also, I'm going to be interviewing probably Keith from Confederation of Wizards, and we'll see, we'll go from there, because I got some other stuff too at the end, so just stick around. Okay, so I'm going to decide to, I'm going to go ahead and play some secret clips, too, from Green Lantern and Sucker Punch. It will also include the videos from those two. Green Lantern was really cool. We got to see Ryan Reynolds, and he actually said a few lines, you know, from the movie that even this little cute little boy asked him to say, and it was so cute. And they talked about a couple of things, you know, why he doesn't have white gloves in the movie, and just a few things. I mean, pretty much the audio gives you everything there is. There isn't really anything besides the actual clip, which even that part, they only showed you the glowing light in the beginning when they say the glowing light, and then they show you a couple of clips of fighting, not very much yet because they're still filming. They actually said they came in just for the panel, and they're going to actually go fly back out to Louisiana to continue. So there wasn't very much, but enough, you know, to get a spark of interest again for this movie, and it's really cool looking. And after that, I'll talk more about Sucker Punch. So here's the audio from Green Lantern.
At this time, it is my pleasure to introduce the moderator for the Warner Brothers panel, Mr. Jeff Boucher of the LA Times and HeroComplex.com.
Comic-Con! How you guys doing? In brightest day, in blackest night. What do you guys think?
Hopefully it doesn't stop.
Let's get going, right? Green Lantern, next summer. It's going to light it up at movie theaters, but Green Lantern today is going to light it up right here in San Diego. I've been hearing a lot about people talking about Hollywood taking over Comic-Con. It seems to me, though, that it might be the other way around. I think Comic-Con's taking over Hollywood. Woo! And I think comics are taking over Hollywood. If you look at the history of Green Lantern, we have great creators like Martin O'Dell, we have Bill Finger, Gil Kane, Neil Adams, and the next person that's gonna walk out on the stage. Let's hear it for Geoff Johns.
Woo!
Jeff, welcome. Thanks. You good? Oh, that's right.
Super psyched. This is the first Green Lantern movie panel in history, which is pretty awesome. Film looks great.
Yeah. I was down in New Orleans and I saw some of the footage, or I saw some of the work being done. You were telling me the other day it was one of the best weeks of your life as being on the set. Tell the fans a little about
that. The best week of my life. I think everybody here wants to see Green Lantern movie as much as I do.
Yeah. And we're here and we're going to jump right in with some footage, right?
Yes.
What do you guys think?
We're still really, they're really, really still in production. There's still a lot of work to be done, but here's the very, very first look at Green Lantern, the movie.
Woo!
Welcome, inhabitants of Sector 2814. The Guardians have chosen you as candidates for enlistment. But before you can be recruited, you must be tested. The light you see before you is controlled by your will. Focus on the light. If you will it, it will glow. Now, focus.
Brightest day. Blackest night. No evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
So Jeff, I didn't mention before, you're the chief. What is chief creative officer now? DC Entertainment.
Yep.
And guiding projects through Hollywood. It must be very exciting for you to see this one going first, since as we can see from your shirt and your hat and your career, Green Lantern means a lot to you.
Yeah, I mean it's awesome to see filmmakers and cast so dedicated to Green Lantern. So they've done an amazing work.
Outstanding. Well, we're going to bring out some more people and fill up this panel because you seem so far away. We're going to start with Greg Berlanti, the screenwriter and producer of Green Lantern. And here comes Donald DeLine, the producer of Green Lantern. And then he brought us Zorro back in a new way, he brought us James Bond back in a new way, now he's bringing us Green Lantern, director Martin Campbell. We have some cast members here for you today. Let's start with the evil genius of Hector Hammond, Peter Sarsgaard. You can't have green without yellow, even if it won't be in this movie yellow, but you have to have Sinestro. Mark Strong. As Carol Ferris in the movie, Blake Lively. Woo! And the man with the ring, Ryan Reynolds. Woo! I want to save time at the end for questions from the audience. You know, Ryan, one of the things that you were telling me about before is that you turn to people like Harrison Ford, Han Solo, and Chuck Yeager to help sort of frame where the compass points for this character. Yeah. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, admittedly, going into this project, I didn't know as much about it as some people around here. But I met with Martin Campbell, and this is a guy that you know, has such a high standard for those around him, and not least of which himself, and that's what I initially fell in love with. But then I delved further, and I learned more and more about this character, and he felt like this kind of amalgamation between Chuck Yeager and Han Solo, and he felt like this classic hero, something that I hadn't seen in a long time on film, a character who can, you know, for lack of a more eloquent way to describe him, he can throw a punch, tell a joke, and kiss a girl. And that was really exciting to me, and I for the life of me, I couldn't figure out, you know, who wouldn't want to play that for a movie, let alone maybe two or three.
Yeah!
You know, Blake, looking out on this crowd, I think you can tell the passion that this property and a lot of the DC Comics properties stir in people. It must be interesting to step into this. It must be a...
Oh my gosh, it's incredible. I actually came to Comic-Con a few years ago and got to walk through the crowd and take pictures with everyone. I'm excited to do the Harry Potter panel next.
And then, Peter, you know, one of the things that is bundled into the fabric of this story and this franchise is things like fear and will and courage. It makes
large
it...
Large heads.
What's that?
Large heads.
And large heads, yes. Tell us about your large heads. Tell us about that.
About the large head.
Yeah, we'll start with that.
I'm a size 60. If you guys know hat sizes, that's pretty big. I don't know, I didn't really realize I was going to have a large head until I had one on me. It was just an incredible thing to do. I mean, being in the kind of makeup that I was in this film, and, you know, it's a whole other kind of acting. It really opens up all sorts of things that you never thought you would catch yourself doing. You know, and it's a total blast. I had more fun doing this movie than I really have had in a very, very long time.
And you're of course talking about Hector Hammond's cranium actually physically gets bigger as the movie goes on. How big does it get?
It's pretty big. Pretty big, people. I mean, not like, you know, that, but big. Heavy. Very heavy.
And then, Mark, you know, in this movie, you have a character who's going to go in different directions down the line. In this film, it's he's got a slightly different role. Do you plan ahead? Do you have to try to hardwire in the future stuff into the movie now, or you kind of play it in the moment?
No, I think you have to, you take what you're given in the moment. I think if whatever happens to it further down the line, I think if you know that, Secret Origins Comics, his job is to be Hal's mentor and put him through his paces, and he kind of earns his grudging respect by the end of the movie. Whatever happens later, that's later.
I told you you were going to feel like Bono up here. What did you think when you came out?
Say that again, sorry?
Remember I told you you were going to feel like Bono when you walked out in front of
the
crowd.
Yeah, it's a wonderful theme. Thank you very much for the reception.
Woo!
Thank you very much. So do you.
So Martin, the essential question right off the bat with a film like this is tone. What can you tell us about the tone of the film?
Well, the tone of the movie is it's light, it has a lot of humor, but also I think the relationships between all the characters are very real. We've tried to keep the action also very real, and tonally I think there's a lot of humor. Clearly with Ryan Reynolds and with Blake and so forth, that's very apparent. And, no, it's just a terrific entertainment, I think. And it's my first superhero movie. I've never done one before, unless you count James Bond as a superhero. But he's nothing like Green Lantern, that's all I can say. Particularly a superhero that goes to another world, the world of Earth. I'm sure all of you know more than I do about it. But anyway, it's a totally, I think it's great fun, but I also think it's a terrific adventure as well.
You know, and also, of course, with any superhero property, the costume is key. And it's a vital
issue could go either way, could make or break a movie. Talk about, with the costume in this one, some of the decisions you guys made. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the costume, you've obviously all seen the costume on the Entertainment Weekly, and so it's always a work in progress, but of course we have the black and green that we all know about the costume. We've lost the white gloves. We just felt it looked far cooler and far more interesting. And there are also, although in some ways it's hard to see on the picture itself, but there are certain lines which we decided our costume, which of course evolves from the ring, but it's more like a skin on Green Lantern as opposed to a costume. And that was the concept of it. And all the lines are lines of musculature, which was our designer came up with. And if you look at a physiological picture of the muscles in the body, of course, all of those lines are very true to that. So a lot of thought's been given to it. It is a work in progress. I think it's really cool. And Nyla Dixon, who is our designer, she was on Lord of the Rings, I think has done a fantastic job, and it will eventually look incredibly cool.
You know, Donald, one of the things about this superhero film, this particular film, is that it goes off the planets. Most of the superhero films we see are confined to the alleys of Gotham or maybe the skyscrapers of New York. Talk a little bit about that as a challenge and as an opportunity.
Well, the opportunity is obviously a great one because we're going to take the audience into the center of the universe, to the planet of Oa, and they'll see the 3600 Green Lantern. So I think as an opportunity, what it does for a superhero movie is it takes you into a new realm. As my partner Greg Berlanti always said, it's part space opera as well. I think, though, the challenges are many. Obviously, we had to create an entire world for this planet of Oa, and we have many teams of artists. We have a great production designer. His name is Grant Major. He also did Lord of the Rings. And we have great creature designers. We obviously will feature many of the famous and well-known Green Lantern characters. Kilowog's going to be there. We're going to see Kilowog. And you saw a little bit of Toma Ray here, and you're going to see, besides Sinestro, another large grouping of great Lantern characters that you all know, from Salak and Boudica to Bzzzt, that's Martin's favorite, and the Green Man, and on. So it's a lot of the movie will be made digitally in that regard.
You know, and Greg, there's so many places to start with a movie like this. When you were coming in, tell us about your sort of priorities and maybe some of the things you didn't want to happen as far as this first film.
Yeah, well, it's when we were first breaking down the mythology of it, it just seemed like a natural place to start with the Silver Age character and Hal Jordan. It all sort of seemed to kind of go outward from there. And then you're just searching through all the comic books of your youth to find the best villains that you can find and all the characters that that you would want to see. I think that was the guys I wrote the draft with, Michael Green and Mark Guggenheim, who I think are here. We were just kids in a candy shop, really pouring through and putting all our favorite moments in, and we realized we had enough at that point for a few movies, not just for one, and kept pushing stuff off and off so that the audience could go on a real journey on the first one, but not necessarily, we can't give away everything at the beginning.
That's fantastic. And then Jeff, I think when this property started moving forward toward Hollywood at different points, we heard a lot of different ways that the movie might have ended up, talking about some of the past projects. And then as far as you're involved, tell me, how did you feel when you heard about some of the other ideas, like Green Lantern as a comedy, or maybe some of the other things?
Well, one of the very first, when I first worked for Richard Donner, one of the first things we talked about was Green Lantern, and that was about 10 years ago, and somebody at one of the executives who's no longer there said, "Can we do the movie without the ring?" And right then I thought, there's never going to be a Green Lantern movie. So 10 years later, to see it evolve and maybe misinterpreted as a comedy at one point, and to get to hear and see someone like Martin Campbell and the cast here tackle Green Lantern with the respect and the power, it's a dream come true.
That's fantastic. And then, Ryan, tell us a little bit about the shoot. You guys have been in New Orleans. I know it's kind of sticky hot. Yep.
Yeah. Yesterday's weather report was actual fire. It's a warm place. I mean, it's tough to shoot some of the action scenes outside. I mean, but you know, to be down there in Louisiana, you know, it's been such a state that's been pretty embattled as of late. It's actually fantastic to be there and to be bringing this kind of attention to that place. And I think there's nobody here that would disagree with that. But they've been so welcoming for us there, and you know, it's just been amazing. It's been about 3 weeks of shooting left to go down there. So you know, God willing, we'll get through it. Yeah.
You know, I know on the home front, your wife is a Marvel character. And I think we're all wondering, does that cause any sort of domestic strife or tension?
We've had some strongly worded dinners. I said this before, but we've probably got a lot more comic books lying around than your average married couple. That's awesome. For sure. But maybe not in this room. Yeah. You know, it's hands down.
Blake, tell us a little bit about your character. You know, Carol Ferris, through the years, has changed, and there's different versions of her. For you and this film, what are some of the, how would you frame her as a person?
Well, Carol Ferris, she's such an exciting woman to play, because oftentimes the man is saving a woman, but she gets to save Hal a few times. And, you know, they're a bit of rivals. You know, they have this past, this love, but they also... you know, they're competitors. So to be able to spar, you know, just like verbally, and then also to be shooting the scenes where we're in these fighter pilot planes, I mean, that was pretty cool. I was so excited. I felt like I was going to be the coolest aunt ever. That was the best part of getting this job, just calling my nephews. And, you know, this film is so unique in that, you know, there's something that you can actually do in real life, like pilot a plane, that these young boys or whoever can look up to, but then you also see them in outer space, you know, flying around. You know, it's just been a wonderful project to be a part of. And to be able to be a strong woman who then becomes a villain later, I can't wait to kick his butt.
Fantastic. And Peter, you know, Hector Hammond isn't pure evil in this film. He's a guy that is pulled down a particular path by what happens to him. That's that probably makes him more interesting for you as an actor.
Yeah, I was very interested in the fact that he had his own origin story in the movie, and to be one way and become another way. You know, I think a lot of times you get what he becomes is always just kind of an expression of what he had inside of him all along. They're not like two different things necessarily. But I don't know. I remember telling Martin quite early on that I felt like he was the kind of kid that licked the battery or went up onto the roof with a coat hanger during a thunderstorm, stuff like that, you know, just to see what stuff felt like and looked like, and that was always kind of the most important thing to me. As a biologist, and particularly interested in, like, extremophiles, animals that live at the bottom of the ocean in the Mariana Gulch, or even just penguins, as a way of understanding what might exist elsewhere, and of course he gets his opportunity to see up close. And,
you know, we're going to take some questions from the audience in a second, and I'd like to remind you all, please make sure your questions end in a question mark. No proposals, no pitches, no threats. You know, hey, how you doing? We'll go ahead. I didn't realize it was there. Okay, go ahead.
Hello, C.T. McLean here. My question is to Peter Sarsgaard. What got you hooked to this project and to the character that you're playing?
What got me hooked? Well, I came in one day and talked to Martin, and Martin told me what the story was, and quite smartly told me the story through the eyes of my character, you know. Since great way to first see something, and you know, just felt like an amazing arc, a great journey for a character to start out one way and end another way, and that's all you really ever want.
Hey, how you doing?
How's it going? Yeah, I think the Green Lantern Corps is such a large cast of characters, and they're all so fantastic. How did you pick the focus for the film? What characters to feature for the story?
Greg, Martin?
Greg? Somebody? I mean, it's, you know, the characters they really focused on, Kilowog, Pilmar Ray, Sinestro, those characters make sense in the history of Hal Jordan, Kilowog being his drill sergeant, Sinestro's mentor, Pilmar Ray, spiritual guide. And then beyond that, picking, it was really up to the production team picking the characters like Stell and Green Man and Biz that they thought were cool. And they're all cool, so we're all cool.
The Green Lantern from Sector 7921.
Brightest day to you all. For Jeff Johns, could this be the beginning of a shared DC universe on film? Thank you.
There's going to be a lot of DC projects coming up, but I can't talk about them here. Maybe.
All right.
Hello.
This question is for Mark Strong. Will your character in this movie kick ass?
Say that again, sorry.
Will your character in this movie kick ass?
He certainly will, yeah. As Hal's mentor, we have an interesting time together, because I feel like it's, Sinestro feels like it's his duty to train him up, because he doesn't believe that a human could possibly be a member of the Corps. So I shall do my best to, as you say, kick ass.
Hello.
Oh, my face is so big.
Okay, my question is for Ryan Reynolds. Did the production company come to you, or did you go to them? And my friend Anna wanted to say hi.
Hi, Anna. But I'll answer the question, Bart. I was asked to, you know, if I wanted to have a meeting with Martin Campbell, and I went and sat down with him, and like I said before, I didn't know that much about the Green Lantern character, but he introduced me to the world, and the thing that he did, the little bit of emotional kung fu he put on me, was that he took me upstairs and took me into the art department of the film, and he showed me what the worlds look like, and what Oa looks like, and what the suit's going to look like, and at that point, the tables had turned entirely, and I was begging him for this job. And at first I sort of, you know, I guess arrogantly thought, oh, I'll just go in there, and if they want me for it, I'll consider it. But what I didn't realize was that they had every intention of making me work for it in every way, shape, and form. I screen tested a couple of times, and I'm glad I did, because, you know, I want to be as right for this character as they do, and I want to make sure it's a good fit. And I think what really pushed it all over the edge for me was I saw this guy who sort of is seemingly arrogant and cocky right off the bat in the film, and how he's given this extraordinary gift, which in turn is incredibly humbling for him. And I thought that was a really interesting arc for a character, particularly in a superhero film.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi. I was just wondering, having been a big fan of the Secret Origins arc, how much emphasis is going to be placed on the relationship between Hal Jordan and his father, Mark?
Well, we all look at each other. At the beginning of the movie, of course, it's well known that Mark and Jordan dies in a... come on. Pull yourself together. You know very well that's going to happen, right? So, he dies in a plane crash, and of course, Hal is there when this happens and sees the event take place, and it affects him very much, certainly for the rest of his life, and certainly through the arc of this particular story, and it plays into his fear, which of course he has to overcome finally at the end of the movie when he becomes a fully fledged Green Lantern.
Hello, how you doing?
Hi. My question's for Jeff Johns. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Now that we have Batman, we have Green Lantern, Superman's coming back, do you think there's a chance for a Justice League movie? And would you all be on board for that?
Well,
There's always a possibility for everything, but Green Lantern is, I think Green Lantern is, the scope of Green Lantern, the success of Green Lantern will really lead the charge for everything DC does.
Hello.
Hi, hi there. Oh, it's kind of right. My question is for everyone. If you guys could dress up as a superhero for Comic-Con, who would you be?
I'd go with a Wookiee because I'd like to be cute and dangerous.
No comments from anybody else?
Harry Potter, I'm sorry. He's not a superhero though, but he's awesome.
You're not the only one that I was obsessed with Captain America, so I guess I would
assume.
Yeah!
I would love to show you Sinestro because I think he looks amazing in this movie. So I have to come see that.
He does. I think I'd like to be the Flash. Absolutely my choice of dressing up.
I'd be Tom Array just because I think he's incredibly cool. Barry Allen, Flash.
Hi.
Ryan Reynolds.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Aww. This is a question for Ryan. What does it feel like to say the Green Lantern Oath?
Aww. He's so cute.
You're the cutest. It sounds a little like this. In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. But those who worship evil's might, beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
Verisimilitude. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, I really
like Richard Donner a lot.
Verisimilitude is a word he put up in the production office of Superman that meant truth, and he meant everything was grounded in reality except for Superman. And that's exactly what Martin Campbell and Don DeLine, this entire cast, have done. This is as real as it gets. So absolutely. And you have a very strange name.
I just want to know if there was going to be an appearance of Mogo in the movie.
There's a lot of Green Lanterns in the film.
Wait, we got one more. Green Lantern Sector 3921.
Hi, my name is John. Hypothetically, if you were to make the DC characters, who would you make next as far as movie-wise? Hypothetically.
Green Lantern 2.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that a superhero has to decide, Mark and Ryan, is how to fly. And I know that you guys, it's an interesting process of how you're actually going to manifest as you're flying on screen. Could each talk a little bit about that and your different style of flying?
Yeah, each Green Lantern has a kind of a distinct fingerprint of how it is that they fly. And it's obviously distinguished by who they are or what their background is. And the thing, I guess, that sort of elaborates on that a little bit is that it's very easy to make all the flight in the film CGI, and I love that these guys have figured out such elaborate and articulate rigs that we get to really spend time up in the air and actually fly. I mean, these things can do things and bank in certain ways and make right turns and left turns and somersaults that you just couldn't do even a few years ago. So the flight part for me has been one of the most exciting and most fun aspects of filling the shoes of the Green Lantern. So obviously the other guys do a bit of flight themselves. I think pretty much everybody in this movie gets up in the rigs at some point.
Yeah, I was doing a bit a couple of days ago. We had a scene, they have these amazing kind of wires that take you up off the ground. They're horizontal, and like Brian says, they kind of allow you to bank and fly, and it feels like being a kid again. It's amazing.
You know, Martin, one of the things that is wired into this film is aviation and sort of the frontier, the test pilot mythology, things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that? That sets Green Lantern apart from other heroes as well, doesn't it?
How being a test pilot.
What's that? Hal. Yes. Yeah. Hal Jordan is a test pilot. That gives
yes,
you a lot
indeed.
Of.
And Carol Ferris is a pilot as well. And there's a very good sequence in the film where they both have to go up and demonstrate they're both flying two F-35s, and they're flying against two UCANs. Those are pilotless robotic planes. And they have to demonstrate how these, because the robotic planes are indeed have been produced by Ferris Aviation. And the idea is, of course, that the a new contract, if this demonstration goes well, then the government will give a big contract to Ferris Aviation, and Hal and Carol go up and go in competition with these two UCANs, and it's a very exciting sequence. And of course, by the end of it, Hal does what Hal does best and pushes the whole thing to the limits, and it's a very exciting sequence. And also the fact that Carol's a pilot is very interesting, certainly up to Hal's standard, and very competitive with one another. And it's an interesting aspect of the movie, actually, the closer to the big pirates. So yeah. Actually one of my favorite scenes.
You know, I know that it's hard to believe, but we've actually run out of time, but I am told that, Ryan, that you have...
This is something I'd like to say before we go. This ring, which I'm extremely attached to, it's been with me for the last 6 months. There's a great tradition, as many of you may know, in the Green Lantern Corps, that these rings are passed on from one to the next potential Green Lantern. And I think it would be only fitting if I parted from this ring here, and particularly left it with an audience member that's cracked. So, I think that'd be pretty good. I'll figure out exactly how to do that.
Well, I want everybody to be a little calm as you try this, but if you look under your seat and you have
you gotta be kidding me.
A magic piece of paper, we will have you raise your hand. This is great. Okay, now we're just gonna run away.
What is it?
No one has the ticket.
It was a magic what?
All right. And if that person comes up to the side of the stage,
crazy. That person is gonna get mobbed.
I'm just like, I got it. Nah.
Yeah,
we'll come backstage and get the ring.
This means we're married, but in space. Somebody have it?
Do we have a winner?
Do we actually have it? Oh, we do. Good.
Here we go.
Yeah.
ladies and gentlemen, the cast and the filmmakers behind Green Lantern.
I hope you enjoyed that. That was, of course, Green Lantern. And I kind of have to tell you the truth. I kind of lied. This is not that short of a podcast, apparently. Because, of course, you saw Green Lantern took forever to talk. But it was really cool. And, of course, I'm going to show you Sucker Punch. And that's pretty long, too. So I might just give you snippets of the rest of it. But it'll be cool, because I want you to hear the full thing for both of those two, because those are big, major movies. Whereas the rest was more just discussion and talking and a lot of visual stuff that they showed you through PowerPoint, so it was not that great and very effective to have on here. So, I'm going to actually go ahead and let you listen to Sucker Punch, which, of course, none of you may not know. So I can't really explain Sucker Punch, really. You might want to look online for it, because I know Vanessa Hutchins is in it, and a couple other people I can't tell you. Of course, the audio would tell you everything, but it was really cool. What I loved about being there was that, actually, for Comic-Con, they had these bracelets, these rubber bracelets. Each of them had one of the names of, you know, each person in the movie, the girls, group of girls from the movie, and had their names and like a little picture of weapons, usually weapons, the certain weapon they use in the movie. Then they had, I think, 5 bracelets? It might have been 6. But they were super hard to find. Oh my gosh. I don't think I found another person who had all of them. Because I actually managed to collect the entire collection of them. You got them all, of course. I got like one randomly at the booth from General Giant. One in, like, the outskirts of, like, the end of the exhibit hall, like, in the tips, the edges of the exhibit hall. I found one of them there. Somebody got me the 2 or 3 of them. And then that left me, I think it was 2, but it might have been 3. And then when I had all of them, I only needed 1 more left. And so I looked everywhere for it. I ended up having to go back to the WB booth and ask him where was his bracelet. It was the last one. It was for, I think, Baby Doll. And the person there who worked there apparently knew what I was talking about exactly and told me the only way to get that bracelet was if you went to the panel for Sucker Punch. Well, it happened that I was already going there. So when they gave us the WB bags that had the Harry Potter t-shirt, the Green Lantern comic, and it came with the last bracelet. So I put them all, and then when you got all the bracelets, you went and they would give you a shirt. But they weren't very good with this, because they were supposed to give you a shirt and a raffle ticket to get entered to this special night party. But they didn't even do that. I think they ditched the idea, because absolutely no one came up, you know, with all the bracelets, except for me. And I was so pissed, too, because when I got there, they were passing out the shirts, and I actually had to go up to them like, dude, I have all the bracelets. Where do I get the shirt? And they're like, well, we've just passed them all out. I'm like, I just got all the bracelets. How is that possible? Because I had been there an hour after the panel ended. And so one of the heads of the booth actually had to go, and they got me the shirt in the back. Because it was crazy. It was all crazy. I was so pissed, though. And then, of course, later on, I didn't even care about that party because I was just so dead and actually got kind of sick from the overnight camping out for that panel. So I didn't even care for that raffle ticket for the after party by the end. But still, here's the audio from Sucker Punch. I hope you enjoy it, and I'll talk to you guys after the audio.
You know, here in Hall H, there are a lot of fuses lit on film firecrackers. There's explosive success stories that start right in this room. Iron Man success story started in this room. District 9 success story started in this room, and that film went on to get an Academy Award nomination for Best Picture. A movie called 300 success story started in this room. Absolutely, that film went on to win, to take in more than $450 million worldwide in box office. And if I was asked to predict what Hughes is going to get lit this year, I would probably say a good bet would be Sucker Punch. And I'm very happy to bring out the filmmaker behind Sucker Punch, writer-director Zack Snyder. Welcome, how are you?
Hey guys! So you guys saw a little Green Lantern. How was that? Pretty awesome, huh? Pretty cool. And how about Harry Effin Potter? Cool. Alright, so awesome, that's all great. It's a little weird, I can see myself, so it's freaking me out. So I guess I just wanted to come down here today. I did, which we'll get to in a minute. We did bash a couple shots together to show you guys. So we'll get to that in a second. But what do we want to do first?
Well, first, let's talk a little bit about the film. I mean, you know, you've had Dawn of the Dead, you've had 300, and Watchmen. And each one of those movies was an adaptation of an existing thing. And this is the first time we get to look inside this strange and curious place that's your brain with your own script.
Yeah. Some would say, don't do that. I've been working on this for about, we've been working, Steve Shibuya and I, who wrote the movie with me, he's got in here. We've been working on this thing for quite a while, maybe 8 years, maybe longer. And I'm a huge fan, you know, of fantasy, and I'm a huge fan of movies. And, you always have a lot to every time you work on a project, you're like, gosh, you know, this is a cool story that I'd love to tell. And that's kind of what Sucker Punch has become. It was just this amazing journey that I wanted to send, you know, torture these girls with, and they said yes to it, so it's good fun, and the studio said yes, so, you know, it's just fun, you know, in this current, climate of making movies, and, you know, to be able to make something that's completely original, and, you know, not based on a breakfast cereal, or super glue, or something like that, which could be cool, too, super glue movie, maybe something like that. That's really what motivated us to go out and do it.
Do you want to show them some footage so they get a sense of what we're talking about?
You know, let's play.
You want to bring out the cast?
Let's bring out the girls. I want the girls. The girls haven't seen it either. You know, so the girls haven't seen the footage at all. They have no idea what movie they're in. No, I'm kidding. They know a little bit. So really, I feel like it'd be awesome to bring them out let them see the footage too, because it's pretty fun. So first, should I bring them up?
Please.
What do you want?
No, I like you.
So, I have Carla Gugino's here. She plays Mrs. Schultz.
You can say roll it.
I don't know.
What are you looking for?
Push through your fear to reach your own inheritance. 1, 2, 3, 4. What you're imagining right now, you control this world. Now relax and just let go. You're gonna wanna watch this.
You kids are
for survival starts right now.
It will be a deep sacrifice and a perfect victory. It will set you free.
Trailer. Tell us a little bit about this film, Zach. As far as the framing, I mean, there's a lot going on there.
So, the movie comes out in March, I wanted to, so we whacked those shots together I really just wanted to give everyone just a sense of kind of what we're up to. We're still a little ways away from finishing the movie, but I wanted, to give everyone a sense of kind of how we're doing it.
Ladies, it must be great. I can tell you're all pretty excited. Boy, you can talk a little bit about making the movie and also a little bit about the footage, maybe go down the line.
Well, that was the first time. I think it's the first time I've ever seen it. We're like dying. I keep craning my neck the entire
time. Well, since people don't know your characters, maybe take turns. Talk a little bit about your character and your reaction to that footage.
Okay. My reaction to the footage is I'm kind of shaking like crazy. But, so I play Baby Doll. And her mother dies, and she's left with her abusive stepfather, and he puts her into an insane asylum to be possibly lobotomized, and she has to sort of escape. She meets these friends along the way that she sort of plans to escape.
I play Blondie, and I'm really afraid that my voice is shaking right now because I am so excited. That was so cool. I had a feeling when we were making it that it was going to be neat, but I had no idea it was going to be that awesome. I give you props, Zach. It's so cool. but yeah, I play Blondie. She kind of fits into the world with this amazing group of girls, and she actually gets to shoot some of the biggest guns, which is, I think, one of my favorite parts. I run around with like a saw and get to shoot 50 cals and 30 cals and all this pretty badass stuff.
I play Rocket, and it's so amazing to see it. God, I wish we could be out there. You guys have the good seats.
Yeah.
Rocket sort of, she plays Sweet Pea's younger sister, and Baby Doll comes into this world, and I sort of have to introduce her, and kind of end up really liking her and what she's trying to bring to the table and offer. And she offers up this really beautiful idea of escape, and I help rally the troops. I'm a rallier.
My character's name is Amber, and she is kind of the first one to jump on board with Baby Doll's plan, and throughout the film she's trying to stay together with everyone, and she's extremely loyal. And I think that kind of reflects, throughout the fantasy scenes.
That footage was crazy. It's hard to even articulate an answer after that. I play Dr. Gorski, who is a Polish psychiatrist in the asylum. And in sort of the alternate world, I'm a dominatrix-influenced choreographer/madame. I mean, you never think you could really say that, right? That is actually my character. It was an extraordinary, extraordinary experience that in only a way that Zach can do is sort of elevated to something like that I don't think I've ever experienced and you probably will have never seen, so.
You know, Zach, one of the things, this film takes place in an insane asylum and it goes well beyond that, obviously. I was telling people it's sort of like Alice in Wonderland meets One Flew the Cuckoo's Nest with a little Walter Mitty, and then about 19 other movies. Tell us about the creative process for this. Where did the story come from?
You know, the story came from where it really originated was, for me, was in this transition sort of concept. You know, I've been making TV commercials before I started making movies for about 15 years, and there was this visual process of sort of condensing time and effing around with time, started to like create this sort of germ of an idea, and Steve and I would kick it around and we would talk about it. And really that transition from an insane asylum to this other world as a place where people go in a stressful moment, in a single moment, being able to sort of pack a whole other experience into this other moment, that's kind of where the idea started, and then it kind of evolved from there and grew. And it also, I was also fascinated by sort of trying to create an ending, because the movie does have sort of a twist or a reveal, and I was always interested in trying to create an ending that was satisfying and interesting, that it wasn't just, right when you start to feel like, the movie's about these crazy action sequences, really what these girls did and was, create a movie that, when I saw the first cut of the movie so far, I felt like, okay, I can just take all the action out of this movie, this will be awesome, because the girls did such an amazing job. So, that's kind of, I don't know. It doesn't answer the question at all.
That's why
I don't do that.
And then the characters have their own dances that they do, and the dances that they do are a representation of self. It transports the viewer into these alternate places that they go. Could you ladies talk a little bit about your dances and the building of it?
Yeah, what we did was, let me just set it up a little bit. What we did was, there's a sequence in the movie that sort of shows the, I guess it sort of depicts a day in the life of the reality that has been created. And in that reality, there's a I don't know, you know, like a sort of a dancing, sort of singing aspect to it. And that the girls each had to do a sort of montage of like what they would have been doing. So we had to create, other than the fight choreography they were doing, they also had to fight the time to do this other crazy choreography, which you saw a teeny glimpse of. But so yeah. Anyway, they can talk about it. They can talk about it. I'll be setting it up. But anyway.
What about the performances?
I was going to say, I can't do a dance, actually.
But yeah, right. Baby Doll doesn't dance because she's not allowed to yet.
Yeah. You don't want to see me dancing. Every time my character dances is when we sort of get transported into the other worlds. It was pretty cool. We all sort of would group together and watch all of the other girls when they had their solo dances, and it was kind of amazing to just sit there and watch them with this crazy choreography.
Yeah. Well, what's so cool is like Carla's character in the reality of the world would be like a therapist, and she's using a form of sound therapy. And then that's sort of translated into another thing of the sound therapy is the interpretation of our own unique dances in the alternate reality. So we all got to learn these different sort of, you know, borderline burlesque, interpretive dances about different internal struggles that our characters were going through. And I think that's what's so cool about the film is that film is you get to sort of visualize your internal struggles. And Zach does it in such a beautiful way of like adding this element. Like, where do we go in our minds when we're experiencing pain, when we're experiencing, whatever, mistrust or uncomfort, and he sort of allows these characters to find a really strong and beautiful way to express that discomfort in their own individual way, and that's what our dances sort of became. I think it'll be exciting for you guys to see them, though. I mean, I don't want to really go into any too much of the details.
I know. We did them in this massive hall that was built that was like an old kind of homage to sort of Moulin Rouge, other time, very rich colors, and this huge space with real people in it, which also is kind of a great thing, because so often when you make a movie, you know, you just have a camera and you're sort of pretending that a bunch of people are watching, and there's such a different thing to live performance. So I think for all of us that was so great that each night, every time we did one of the dances, there was a huge group of people there watching, and it gave it this kind of spectacular energy.
You know, there's a really a fascinating liquid mayhem to some of the scenes. It's really interesting to see what you've done visually for the film. I think we're going to take some questions from the audience, and then, hey there. Oh, these guys again.
Are we getting overbearing?
No, it's a nice presentation.
This question is for Zack Snyder. In 300, you worked with an all-male cast. How much better is it to work with an all-female cast?
Not entirely all male cast, but there were a lot of males in 300, I will agree with that. It was awesome. These guys were awesome. It was, I could say something, you know, about male and female sexuality. I could say something about sexual preferences. I could say something about a lot of stuff. Nice. But maybe what I'll just say is that these actors were amazing and did an amazing job and never flinched, never blinked. Did, when I asked them to do crazy shit, they just were like, all right, well, who should I kill? Which of those people should I kill? And I said, well, all of them. And they were like, okay, fine. And so that is all I can ask. And so I will say that it was an amazing experience working with these guys. They were great. Thank you. In amazing 2D, those two were.
Hey there, how you doing?
Eye popping 2D, yes.
Hi. Good afternoon. The movie looks great. Congratulations to the cast. My question is for the beautiful and lovely and charismatic Jamie. I wanted to know how you prepared for a hardcore acting role, seeing as before we've seen you like sweep roles and also like the horror type genre, which are already broke. So, what exactly pertains to you preparing for
this? Who's the 3D glasses?
I had to.
Okay. Sure.
Okay, yeah. I had a crash course in how to fly a plane and how to fly a chopper, so that was pretty cool. I got to work out with the rest of the girls. I mean, the girls worked out so hard, you know, and I jumped in. I was a month late, but they were already training for a month, so we trained together for 3 months, and, you know, it required lots of physical commitment, but most importantly, you know, it was just getting to know the girls and hanging out with them, and kind of naturally came together that we all love spending time with each other, which is perfect for the film because it translates perfectly on screen.
You know, actually, before we go to the next question, Zach, that was Led Zeppelin's When the Levee Breaks.
That was Led Zeppelin.
How hard was it to get that? I mean, is that in the film, or is that...
It's not in the film, but, yeah, it's very hard to get that. As a matter of fact, it's possible, but we had a connection. We didn't have a connection, but then, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's very effective. Hey, how you doing?
C.T. McClain here. My question is to the five lovely ladies at the table. What's it like to now have a place amongst this sexy, ass-kicking women of cinema?
That's awesome.
Totally awesome. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I think it's kind of... This movie is so different in terms of a female action film, you know, because a lot of times if there's kind of girls fighting, they can be catty or it's sort of like a parody, you know, like, oh, those girls have guns, that's funny. But these girls are actually all supporting each other and they're genuinely really tough. So I think it was cool to be able to do that because it's not something I've really seen before.
Yeah, it's a little early to say. We haven't, you know, it's like 15 at this time, you know, it's different. It's going to be a whole different thing, you know. But I think an absolute credit to Zach is that sometimes, you know, working within this type of genre, I think a lot of people tend to build one-dimensional characters, particularly for women. And I think what's so exciting about being women on this end of the genre is that not only do we get to do amazing kick-ass things, but we also get to be playing with three-dimensional, beautiful characters. That I think is going to be really surprising for the audience, you know. So I think that's a cool thing. Not only do we get to like wield amazing weapons and do kind of amazing otherworldly fighting styles, but that we're actually, you know, intricate human beings on the screen as well.
Oh, it's very heavy.
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. My name is Justin Gray. I just want to thank you, Zach, for being responsible for the best adaptations of graphic novels. So thank you for that. And then my question was, the action scenes in The Watchmen, do you have the same action choreographer for this Sucker Punch movie?
Yes, David Caro did 300 and Watchmen, and he worked on this movie. You know, we try and shake it up, you know, whenever we get after it, so, you know, I think you're going to see some stuff in this movie that, you know, we did stuff in this movie we've never done before, so, you know, it'll be, I think it's fun. I think it'll actually good. But David's amazing. You know, he's just a genius of mayhem, so that's all.
You know, 300 is a fairly simple story. Watchmen and Sucker Punch are incredibly complex. Do you find yourself leaning one way or another? Is there one that you find particularly appealing as a filmmaker?
Well, I mean, it's a lot more exhausting to make a movie that has like 100 different layers and 10 different stories going on, and they all have to kind of come together in the end. And so, I mean, there is that. I mean, not to say I long for the simpler days when people didn't need complicated movies. No, I'm just kidding. Each thing is its own thing, and I guess the reality is they're all complicated in their own way. You know? And so, it's just. You know, I guess when you're juggling things, maybe, you know, there's an element of that that's difficult, but also when you're telling this sort of simple, straightforward story, it's also difficult. You've got to keep it compelling and interesting. So, you know, they're both difficult.
Hey, how are you?
Pretty good. My question is for Zack Snyder. With Inception, and now it looks like this has continued the tradition of films that take place in the real world, crossed over with fantasies taking place in people's minds. And one of the trickier things with those types of films is how do you define the line between fantasy and reality, and how much do you want to define that line, how much do you want to spoon feed the audience, and how much do you want them to figure out for themselves.
Awesome. Well, there's a couple ways to answer that. I don't want to ruin the movie, but I will say that, you know, I spent a lot of time in working on this movie and trying to figure out the, as you would, sort of the device or the part of the movie, of course, that either transports you or, and then the rules and reality of the world once you're in the alternate reality. And so, yeah, just like anything, I think you have to spend a lot of time with that. As long as, you know, those things all coalesce in the end. You know, I think that's the real trick and the real challenge of the film is getting them all to match up in the end.
Do you anticipate the film will be rated R or PG-13?
I think the movie actually has a chance of being rated PG-13, to be honest. So we'll see. I'm waiting to see what they say. You know, we have a lot of fantasy-style creatures that are being mowed down. So if you're familiar with a little movie called Lord of the Rings, they made a movie called Lord of the Rings. It's crazy. They lorded the rings completely. No, they killed a lot of orcs in that movie. And they got a PG-13. They cut their heads off, which I thought was awesome. But
yeah, if you kill an orc or a droid, you can hold on to the PG-13.
Exactly. Or if your Nazis are zombies, they're not Nazis because of World War I. Everyone calls them Nazis. It makes me crazy. But anyway, if your German soldiers are zombies, then maybe it's cool to kill them a lot. So that's what we did.
How are you today?
Hi.
Hi, my name is Angel Hunter. I'm a feminist filmmaker.
Awesome.
This is a question for the panel. How was it making and writing such strong female characters, which is not the norm in Hollywood?
Because it's interesting, this is a conversation that we had sort of even from the beginning of this process, which is what's so, exciting and unique about this movie is that you do have incredibly empowered women and girls in this movie who are all going through a lot and trying to figure out how to deal with it. And it was striking me when we were talking about like kick-ass female characters. I think what's so cool that Jenna was touching on about this too is that women are always looking for multiple layers because women are very complex creatures. And what's so cool about this is it's not necessarily about, you know, you don't have to like not be sexy or not be funny or not be this or not. You don't have to just be one thing. I think for a lot of male action heroes, it's cool to be everything that you are. Whereas if it's a woman, it's like, well, I don't know, they're dressed kind of sexy. Maybe it's not empowering, maybe it's objectifying. I think that the truth is, yes, that is a tricky line, but I think that the more kind of interesting side of that line is that women can be all of those things, and that, you know, Zach, who is an amazing, obviously, writer, director, visionary, all of these things, he actually has all that, and he also really likes women, and all that comes along with that, so he writes really awesome characters for us to play, and I think for everyone you'll see a real strength and a triumph within themselves from the beginning of the movie to the end of the movie, from where they learn and get stronger and cooler and more kick-ass, and it's pretty awesome.
That's true. I do like women. Although that has been called into question after I make 300. Some people are like, those guys are too hot. So what are you doing?
So,
I do like women now. I'm gonna go out.
Zack Snyder likes women, ladies and gentlemen. Mark that down. You know, this is a panel on Sucker Punch. We're going to keep it on Sucker Punch, but I read in the LA Times the other day that you are going to be writing Xerxes.
Yes. We're working on Kirk Johnstad and I, who wrote the screenplay for 300, are working now on a follow-up to that movie called Xerxes that's been a graphic novel that has been drawn right now by Frank Miller. You're familiar with him. And so we're gonna try and knock that out.
Outstanding. And there's another question. How are you?
I'm fine. My question is for Vanessa. What was it like working with Sucker Punch? Because it's a lot different than the other films you've done before, so.
Awesome.
It was amazing. I do this because I
tell, Zach will ever give me the part. So I auditioned several times, and luckily enough, it did give me the part. And it was one of the best experiences of my life. I got to grow, I got to unleash something I've never done before, and just worked with such incredible actresses. Like, everybody on the film was so amazing. Zach, and I just feel like I grew so much from this, and it was definitely one of the most memorable experiences I've had.
I think we're going to take one more question. And what, you guys want to watch it again? Anybody?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, huh? Yeah. You want to go down there?
Yeah.
You guys don't mind
it? All the girls come down here. We're going to show it again because I can't see it.
Okay.
All right, go.
Take a question.
Wait, go.
They really want to see it. How are you?
How's it going? Good, how are you?
Good.
My question's actually for Zach.
Hi,
I was wondering, how's it feel different from working on stuff that's already made to your own material?
You know, look, I do love adapting. I love comic books, and I love adapting them. And fucking, you know, people always ask me, you know, like, oh, maybe you're too faithful to that graphic novel or whatever. No one would ever say that to someone who had just, you know, adapted a normal novel, a non-graphic novel. They wouldn't say, like, oh, you know, you filmed too much of that book. You know, it's too good. It's too much like the book. You know, and I always say, like, you know, and especially in the graphic novel world where it's a picture medium, there's a drawing there, so I'm supposed to not know that the drawing that already exists, crazy. But I will say that when we started working on Sucker Punch and we had written screenplay, like, the screenplay exists, like, once you write it, it's kind of there, now that's the thing you're shooting. And so, I guess for me, it's like once we've written it, it kind of became just like anything else I was adapting, you know, or anything else I was trying to visualize. And then I try to treat it with as much respect and reverence as I do, you know, as any Watchmen or 300 or Dawn of the Dead for that matter. Just really try and love the material, and I think that's what we did.
Outstanding. Well, I think we're going to watch it again. We're going to let them have a chance to get down there.
I love that they're running to watch it. That's so awesome.
Yeah, you guys are down the stairs and over. You guys don't mind if they come out there? Is that alright?
No.
Yeah, just right. It's right. I saw it from back there yesterday. It's pretty good about right where,
right here.
Yeah.
If they sit in somebody's lap, I don't think there's enough seats.
Yeah. Check. Right here.
I brought it down.
Don't go there.
What did I do? Sorry.
Go in the middle, over here. Okay, that's fine. This is awesome, dude.
He's already directing it.
Sorry. Can't help it.
So we're going to watch this, and maybe, ladies and gentlemen, how about a round of applause for Sucker Punch?
Thanks, guys.
Woo!
And that was Sucker Punch. I hope you liked it. And I don't know. Yeah, they showed it again. They showed the same thing twice. But they wanted to see it themselves, so that was kind of the end of it. And so I stopped recording after that. So that was all pretty much what you've listened to from this episode and the last episodes, all from the Warner Brothers panel, really. And there was a couple of things. Warner Brothers did a lot. They had their own booth, and they had their own things they passed out. They had the props from Harry Potter, and they passed out some mugs. They were like porcelain, go green kind of mugs, and it had advertisements for the DVDs release for Vampire Diaries and V and some other ones. I can't remember, but they did that every morning. And also, for that, also, they passed out some Harry Potter Lego keychains, and they were really cool. But the only thing was, they only passed out for two houses, Hogwarts houses, Gryffindor and Ravenclaw. For some reason, I thought they would pass out Slytherin and Hufflepuff the next day, and they didn't. Unless they passed them out a different time of the day, but every time the exhibit hall opened, they would have those keychains for you. So, I don't know. I got Ravenclaw, Gryffindor. If anybody has Hufflepuff and Slytherin, give me a call or whatever. Not call, just message me on my website and Maybe we can do a trade, because I got a few extras of Gryffindor and Ravenclaw, so if you want to trade, we can trade. And that'd be awesome to have a whole collection. What else? Pretty much, that's it. So for Darkwing Duck, I did get the Darkwing Duck comic, and I was happy about that. And I ended up waiting in a panel for the Harry Potter fandom, and before that was to draw, like a drawing kind of panel. And I ended up being the creator of Darkwing Duck and the person who is for the comic also, came, and Incredibles and Wally. And I was kind of happy about that because I was so happy because that's some of my like childhood kind of stuff. And I really love Darkwing Duck. And what else? Oh, also went to the America's Greatest Otaku. And see who was the biggest anime person. And it was kind of neat to know they were traveling. Tokyo Pop is traveling with this van of, you know, really big anime people and manga people, otaku people. And they talked about their trip and visiting the industry and different places and creators. And it was really awesome. I did not record that at that time because I really wasn't sure what it was about when I went. But that was really cool. If you want to ever check that online, just go to Tokyo Pop, because they're the ones who are doing that. And I think I'm going to go ahead and let you listen to a little bit, like a snippet of Darkwing Duck Incredibles and Wally panel, the comic draw, you know, that. The tongue-tied right now. So anyway, I'm going to go ahead, show you that, talk a little more after that, and we're going to have a cool time after that. About talking about anything that's coming up soon. I forgot to record. Now I suck at this. Sorry guys, but I thought I had the audio and apparently I didn't record it. Luckily enough, I did the Harry Potter fandom one, but of course, I just quickly go over, you know, the panel was, because I'm sorry guys, I totally didn't record it. It didn't exist on my recorder. So yeah, they just pretty much went over different ideas, the different styles between Darkwing Duck's original, you know, cartoon series on Disney to the comic version, which of course now that I've read it, I can totally tell you what it is, which of course, you know, Darkwing Duck in the beginning, you know, superhero, blah, 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 he gets Gosling, and they're together, and the comic version is years later. And years later, there's these robots now who are kind of like, they take over the police and everything now, and there's no need for a crime fighter or even villains, so they all get regular jobs. So it's hilariously funny, because he now has a job in this, like, you know, the place where the robots and everything, and one of the villains, I'm not going to say who, but one of the villains actually works in the same cubicle, and it's so funny. And then all of a sudden, of course, the whole series needs to spark up, and then they need the hero again, so Darkwing Duck comes back in. And I'm not going to say anymore. If you guys want to read it, if you want to know what happens, just message me and I'll talk to you about it. Because I've been reading it lately, and I just read the third issue about it. And then Wally, I don't have much to talk about Wally, and Credle's not either, because I haven't read those two yet, but they did talk about a little bit of their art style of it, and pretty much the same as the movies. And they actually did, while they're talking, they would actually draw a picture of, like, you know, one of them, the person that did Incredibles, drew a picture of, you know, the dad from Incredibles. He didn't get time to finish the whole family, but he did draw, like, the blue outlines for the family, and also for Wally, he finished Wally, and also he did a, kind of like a Mexican Wally, with a little poncho and sombrero, and it was really cute. And they did a Darkwing Duck one with him kind of mysterious, and one with him, like, blasting his gun. And then the original creator did, like, a quick sketch of Darkwing Duck, just kind of goofy thing. But they had this, they drew these art, and they actually had a raffle, and actually won the Incredibles one. So I have it at home, the Incredibles, and that is really awesome. It was cool. And they actually had in like a sketch paper, and it was really neat. And then I brought that home with me. What else? That's pretty much it. I'm going to wrap it up here a little. Of course, check out my website, as I said in the beginning, because that has everything. Like, Twitter, I give you the insights of what's coming up next. And, you know, kind of up to date. Of course, my photos, if you click my photos, usually I try to update as much as possible with the things I get in. Of course, Twitter gets them a little bit quicker, and I post those up quicker, like when I got the Harry Potter silly bands. I just got those in, and I got the entire collection before Warner Brothers could even make it available. And I actually had the whole series of six already, and which are Creatures, Professors, Harry, the Hogwarts houses, and I can't remember the rest. But yeah, I have the whole list there, and I put it on Twitter, and I'm trying to put it on everywhere else. I think I put it on my Tumblr, so if you want to check out my Tumblr, I actually wrote it in, and I think I put a picture of what it is, so you can see all six of them. And let's see what else. Upcoming things are, I'm going to do an interview with the, of course, us in the beginning, the author of the one who's doing the Harry Potter art pop-up book, and I'm going to get that interview, and that might be not this upcoming episode, but the episode after that. And I think this upcoming one is going to be the one, my interview with Confederation of Wizards, and their goal to get enough money to send two people to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Of course, the money has to be raised. So, and they're taking donations, you know, anything, really. We have there's a couple of projects, actually, going around. There's Gigs for Galleons. If anybody has a wizard rock band or, you know, anything of that sort that they are in or they know of, tell them about it. Gigs for Galleons is a performance. They can do a performance, and the profits that they make from that performance, from, you know, tickets or whatever, will go towards the goal for the website. And that will be, the performances will be like the week before Halloween, so that on All Hallows Eve, we'll have an actually big goal celebration of how much we can raise from that project. There's a few other upcoming projects we have on there, and you can check out the site for that. But we'll talk more about that on that next podcast. I'm thinking each podcast is going to be every 2 weeks, because it seems like that's how it's going so far. And that'll be one of them. And then, okay, so it'll be Confederation's author interview. And then after that, we'll hit October, and that will be the podcast covering Onicon, which is an anime convention, and we'll have voice actors, panels, fun stuff, you know, going on from cosplay, and also a couple of interviews as well, and that'll be another big one. So, till then, I say, everybody have a nice day, have fun, check out my websites, check out fun, message me, follow me on Twitter if you want to, because that's always fun. And see you next time.